So we are have embarked on the study of Upanishad for the last few months, maybe years now. And because our meetings have been somewhat infrequent, I would probably like to summarize just a very quickly few things. So for those of you who have not come before, we can say that the Vedas, which is the scriptural text for the Sanatana Dharma, scriptural text for Indians or Hindu, if you want to say, I don't like the word Hindu really, because it doesn't mean anything, because it's not an ism. The message which is in our Upanishads and in our Vedas is a universal message. And in your Vedas, you will find that all the oblations and all the glorifications are done for the phenomenal forces, not for a given figure or a formed entity. So, about 5,000, maybe 6,000 years ago, perhaps, sage by the name of Vedavyasa traveled over India, and whatever knowledge was communicated by individual rishis, he collected it, classified it, and put it into four different texts. These are called four Vedas. So therefore there is Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda, and Atharvan Veda or Atharva Veda. And now this system of study there, where the knowledge actually came from the guru to student, guru shishya parampara. The guru were very dexterous in how they communicated the knowledge to the student. You will actually see that today in this Upanishad itself. So they first studied the students. They asked them to live with them in the ashram, in the Gurukul. They figured out exactly at what level, with what intensity, they can progress in their knowledge. And then, step by step, they were led into the highest knowledge. So when we say this highest knowledge, that is what is contained in the end portion of Veda, each Veda actually. This is called Vedanta. And the other name for this is called Upanishad. So, it is believed that at one time we had more than 1,000 Upanishads available. Scholars have actually found about 108 Upanishads that they say are authentic. And now when you say there are only four Vedas, and how come there are 108 Upanishads? So obviously each Veda has more than one Upanishad containing it. And so each Veda actually has knowledge that was compiled from various gurus, various rishis, various acharyas. And so each one of them had their own specific way of communicating the highest knowledge. So that became an Upanishad. And in fact, we believe that these Upanishads are apaurusheya. So they don't have any authorship, they are not man-made. They are actually significant. This significant knowledge is actually revealed to the rishi or the guru when they were in their intense mode of meditation. That is what is believed. And so you will find that none of these Upanishads have really any authorship at all. Now, 108 Upanishads are very difficult for us to study. Even one Upanishad these days is becoming difficult. In fact, my experience is that when I say let us study Upanishad, most people will say that is too difficult. So then we say, okay, let us start Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita. And they say, Ramayana karo, chalo. Now, the idea is that Ramayana is insignificant, lot of full of stories. So Ramayana karo. Bhagavad Gita and Upanishad are too difficult. It's also a wrong concept actually. Of course it is full of stories, but it has lot of highest knowledge contained in Ramayana. So maybe one day we will take Ramayana here if there is a possibility. But anyway, so this Vedas then, we can say, is composed of two types of composition in each Veda. So four Vedas, each Veda can be divided into mantra portion and Brahmana portion. So all the glorification, stuti, ityadi is actually in the mantra portion. And then later portion is called Brahmana portion. And it turns out that some of the Upanishads are actually contained in what we will assume is the mantra portion. So it's in the beginning portion. And these Upanishads are considered to be higher, because even when the rishis will try to explain to the students, when the guru will try to explain to the students some significant utterings which we find in the Vedas, rishi in the Brahmana portion will actually quote the mantra portion and say, look, this is not my thinking, this is not my saying. You will find the same thing in the mantra portion. Here is the mantra. So we know therefore that in our scriptures, mantra portion of Vedas has the highest authority. Whenever there is a dispute also, or there is a misunderstanding, it is usually removed by quoting mantra portion. Now another way to divide the Vedas will be to say that it has three portions. We can divide into four also, but let's say three. It has three portions. One is called Karma Kanda. So therefore a lot of rituals are mentioned. The benefits of these rituals are mentioned, etc., etc. This is called the Karma Kanda portion. And then there is also Upasana Kanda. So Upasana means spiritual practice performed either through the body, the mind, or the speech is called Upasana. And then there is Jnana Kanda, so the Jnana portion, the knowledge portion. Now this knowledge portion is actually the smallest portion. So by and large we can say in brief, or we can say about there are 100,000 mantras in Vedas. Out of them, over 80,000 mantras are actually belonging to Karma Kanda. 16,000 or so belong to Upasana Kanda. And only 4,000 belong to the Jnana Kanda. So in that sense, you can see that this is the highly filtered, strong dose of real philosophy contained in Upanishads. In fact, Upanishads are very rare to have any stories, although we saw Kathopanishad, which has a story. The Upanishads are also in the form of questions and answers. This Upanishad is called Prasna Upanishad. So Prasna plus Upanishad becomes Prasno Upanishad. So there are six questions that the students ask, and the teacher will answer each one of them elaborately. And because these are not written by, these are apaurusheya, these are all really revealed knowledge that is contained in the Upanishad, therefore there is no name to any Upanishad. So therefore some later on names are given. So this Upanishad, because there are six questions, is called Prasna Upanishad. Okay. Now in the classical way of studying Upanishad, usually we start with Ishavasya Upanishad. Then we follow that with Kena Upanishad. Then after Kena, we do Katho Upanishad. So Kathak, Katho Upanishad. Then comes the Prashna, which we are taking up now, because the other three we have already done. We are not done, just the Upanishads are done. So Prashna Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, which is considered to be even highest among the higher knowledge. Then that's followed by Taittiriya Upanishad, Aitriya Upanishad, and Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka. This is the order in which usually it is done. Now the first Upanishad, Isavasya Upanishad, belongs to Yajurveda Sukla Paksha. The Keno Upanishad belongs to Samaveda. The Katho Upanishad belongs to Yajurveda Krishna Paksha. So this, then you will say, what is Krishna? I understand, he is the God. But who is this Sukla? So Sukla means bright, white. Krishna means dark, black. And each one of the Vedas at one time had many, many branches. These are called Shakha. And most of them are lost now with time. Except that in Yajurveda, two Shakhas are still available almost in its entirety. So therefore one Shakha, one branch is called Sukla Yajurveda, the other is called Krishna Yajurveda. And Prashna, Mundak and Mandukya, three Upanishads belong to Atharvaveda. So in future, if we continue after Prashna Upanishad, we will see actually all the three Upanishads from Atharvaveda. This is simple introduction. Now each Upanishad starts with a Shanti part. And this Shanti part is for the sadhaka, is for myself. This is usually chanted by everybody along with the teacher. And it is not meant to pacify the surroundings, it is meant to pacify me from the surroundings. So this Shanti part for every Upanishad is not necessarily different. So for the next three Upanishads, we'll have the same Shanti part. Why? Because they belong to the same Veda. So it is specific to Veda. And so before we study our Upanishad, or we start studying the Upanishad, we will actually chant this. We'll understand what this is about. And then we will go into proper study of Upanishad. So I will chant and then you repeat after me. Om Bhadram Karne Vishrunuyam Devaha. Bhadram Pasche Maksa Birya Chatra. Sirairange tustu vangansthastanubihi. Vyashema devahitam yadayuhu. Swasti na indro vruddhasravaha. Swasti na pusha visvavedaha. Swasti nakstaksho aristanemihi. Swasti no bruhaspatir dadhatu. Om shanti shanti. शांति So this is called invocation, or it is also called Santi part, because at the end of each invocation there is Santi, Santi, Santi is repeated three times. Let there be peace, let there be peace, let there be peace. The reason why it is three times, as we have seen so many times, is peace from the phenomenal forces. So we are sitting here studying, if there is a lot of thunderstorm and earthquake or other kinds of disturbances, we won't be able to continue to study. So at least while I am studying, may the devas of phenomenal forces bless me so that my study will continue without any disturbance. Then the second Santi part is for the surrounding. So if there is a police siren going on or fire engine going, then we'll be all disturbed. So therefore, may there be peace in the surrounding. And then finally, if everything is peaceful, my mind may not still be peaceful. So may my mind also be peaceful and allow me to study this properly. So it's three times Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Okay. Now, most of the invocations start with Om. Om is actually a symbol of the most purest form of highest principle. What does that mean? So Om is actually indicating that which is the very essence in everybody, including me. So it is that very life principle. It is that very factor because of which I am who I am and everybody is who they are. It is because of which I exist. It is because of which I know that I exist. So that is indicated by Om. And it is the purest because there is no adulteration in it. We don't say Om is big or small or white or effulgent or etc. etc. No such upadhis are superimposed. Om is Om. So therefore it is the purest way of addressing the highest. So when we say Om, all of a sudden, whatever our mind was doing, wherever my intellect was, however my body was, we should become immediately aware of where I am, why I am here for, and what is it that is being discussed. So that is the purpose of Om. Bhadram. Bhadram means auspicious. That which is auspicious. Karne bhi srunyam devaha. O devata, hai deva. May I only hear that which is only auspicious through my ears. So that's one meaning. May I only hear that which is auspicious through my ears. The other meaning is, may my ear be powerful to hear every significant thing that is being uttered by the Acharya. Now we can say, where is the question of devata? It's ear is ear, I can hear as long as I don't have any medical problem. And even now if I have medical problem, I can get hearing aid. So where is the question of devata? So in our scriptures, in our philosophy, even when we are doing rituals, which means it is an outward activity, it's not a meditation, it is not even an upasana, we always keep in mind that there is a substratum below. That is to say that every ability I have is functional only because of an entity which I consider to be higher entity, I consider to be Devata, is blessing that entity to work. That's why we have so many Devatas. We can't live without Devata. Everything we do, we ask for blessing from the Devata, a corresponding Devata, a corresponding God, corresponding deity. So therefore, this auspiciousness, Bhadram, is being asked from the deity because of which my ears are able to hear. Bhadram pasye maksha bhirya jartraha. Bhadram pasye, pasyati means to see. May I see only auspicious things. Not only I hear auspicious things, may I see only auspicious things. Or we can say that, may my eyesight continue to be powerful throughout my life. Or at least as long as the study is going on. And this yajatraha means one who is worshipful. So also this prayer, I mean this half of the sentence is also invoking the presence of God. Yajatra, those who are worshipful. So therefore this is also offered to the devas. And this yajatra I think is easy to understand because you know we all know the word yajman. So yaja means worshipper. So one who does the yajna yagadi is called yajman. So it's a worshipper. And yajatra is worshipful. The same root is there. Sthirairangei tustuvangastastanubihi. Sthirairangei. Now the student is asking that let my body be able body. Let me be strong. Let my body be strong. Because obviously if the body is not strong, then any study, not only scriptural study, will be difficult. Because the mind will continue to go somewhere where there is a pain or whatever else is there. Therefore, let my body be strong through this study. And let me leave Vyashem Devahitam Yalayuhu. Yat Ayuhu means let whatever my lifespan is, let me live hell and hearty. Let me live healthy. I don't care what is my life. I'm not asking for longer life. Whatever the lifespan is. Oh God, please allow me to remain healthy. Why? So that not only I can reach the highest goal of my life, but I also continue to serve the society. These are the two reasons. So I continue to be a positive contributor to the society. And also, I don't see any problem from my body in my spiritual study, spiritual sadhana. Swasti na Indra vruddhasrava. Now the prayer is to the Indra. Indra is the king of God. So vruddhasravaha means not an old god. Vruddhasravaha means one who is very famous. One who is known to everybody. One who is very famous. Hey Indra, I pray to you to give me the blessings. Swasti na Pusha Vishwaveda. Pusha means sun. So, O sun, I ask for your blessings as well. Now you will actually see sun mentioned in this Upanishad quite a bit. So this is very appropriate for me to spend some time talking about sun. Here sun is referred to as Vishwaveda. This is the omniscient part of Brahman, omniscient part of God, all-knowing part of God. Vishwaveda means he knows the entire universe. Why does he know the entire universe? Because it is in the light of the sun that we are able to see everything. It is because of the light of the sun that I get up in the morning. It is in the light of the sun that I get my vitamin D. It is in the light of the sun that I get the vitality. So therefore, sun knows everything. Sun is pervaded everywhere. And in fact, I cannot exist without sun. We know that today anyway. Because we won't be able to eat vegetables. Forget organic, even inorganic vegetables we won't be able to eat unless photosynthesis is there from the sun. Then you can say, no, but that's okay. I can eat animals. The animals we eat are all vegetarian animals. We don't normally eat animals that have eaten animals. We normally eat vegetarian animals for some reason. And so nothing will survive without the presence of sun. In fact, if it wasn't for the sun, the whole earth cannot survive, because it is the gravity of the sun which is actually keeping us from being flung away into the vastness of the space. So sun is everything. Therefore, sun is pervaded through and through all entity which is alive or dead. So all the beings and things are all through the sun. So therefore, sun is everything. So Vishvabedha, therefore sun knows everything. Na Pusha Vishvabedha. Swasti Nakshatraksho Arishtanemihi. So this Tarksha means Vayu. Tarksha means actually wind. Real meaning of Tarksha is Garud, the eagle. Garud is eagle, right? Eagle. And eagle actually moves around almost as if there is no obstruction to it. They fly very high and they catch the current and they glide also. There is no obstruction to them because they can fly higher than mountains, we can say. So therefore this Taksha is Garud. Arishtanemihi means unobstructed movement. So this is a prayer to Vayu God. This is a prayer to wind god. And then Swasti no Bruhaspatir Dadhatu. Bruhaspati is the Acharya, the Guru. And Dadhatu means may you give us the auspiciousness to hear. There are several meanings to Bruhaspati also. One of the meaning of Bruhaspati is one who protects the spiritual wealth of a seeker is Bruhaspati. Also another meaning is he is the lord of speech. And that is very appropriate here because the student has already asked that may he hear everything that is being said. And may he hear only those things that are auspicious. So the teacher is ready to give all the lessons. But the teacher cannot communicate the things in the right manner. And although the student is ready, nothing will happen. So here this prayer is actually mentioned, is uttered by both the student and the teacher, both. So therefore, the Lord of speech, may you give me the ability to communicate what needs to be communicated to the student, so proper speech may come out. With that, the Shanti Mantra is over. Okay. Now in this Upanishad, as we know, as I told you, there are six students. Six students, that means there are six questions. Each student has a question. And these questions can be divided into two groups. The first three questions are about Paravidya. And the second three questions are about... I'm sorry, the first three questions are Aparavidya. The next three are Paravidya. So therefore, the lower Brahman and the upper Brahman, we can say. Or the lower knowledge and the higher knowledge. Then the question may come as to what is the lower knowledge and what is higher knowledge, what is lower Brahman and what is higher Brahman, ityadi. So in a nutshell, if somebody has to answer, anything which has form is lower knowledge. Anything that deals with karma and upasana is lower knowledge. That which does not deal with karma or upasana but deals with knowledge directly is higher knowledge. And the entity that is to be invoked at that time is the one without any forms or attributes. So that is the higher Brahman. So the higher Brahman is the one which has no form, no attributes, nirguna and nirakar. Whereas the lower Brahman is that which has form and has attributes, sakar and saguna. That is the difference. So therefore we can say that the first three questions and the three answers given by the Guru belong to the karma upasana level. Whereas the next three questions, the 4, 5 and 6, belong to the jnana kanda, jnana level. Then another question may come in our minds, but you had said that Upanishad is the highest knowledge, why the karma and upasana is mentioned here? So there is, the teacher never said that I'm not going to talk about karma and upasana. The teacher has to make sure that the student has done karma and upasana, then only the student can glide into the higher knowledge. So when a Vedantin talks about higher knowledge and karma and upasana is only inconsequential in the final result, he or she does not mean that it is not useful. It only means that in the ultimate game plan, when the real is realized, which is a contradiction, when the real is realized, you cannot give it any cause-effect relationship. Because cause and effect are in time. And that which we are trying to gain will not be gained in time because we have not lost it in time. Something we have lost in time, that means I can say, oh, I lost my wallet yesterday, you know, but I got it today. I found it lying on my table. I got it. Then you lost it yesterday, you got it today, that is in time. Then there's a cause-effect relationship. But here, Vedanta says that you have not lost it. Even when we don't know it, Brahman is who we are. And therefore, a cause-effect relationship cannot be given to. The other reason is also, if you give cause-effect relationship, then you have to say that it is because of my effort. Just like we say, I'm a self-made man, you know, my father left me nothing, look what I did. So like that also we'll say, I'm a self-made guru. I made everything happen because day and night I was studying all the Upanishads and this and that. And that is laughable because no amount of finite efforts can lead to the infinite. And then if you say you made that happen with your effort, then you are actually, you as a jiva, you as an individual entity, is bigger than the Brahman. And that is laughable. So therefore, cause-effect relationship cannot be given to the ultimate knowledge which we all hope will happen to us. Okay. So now the 6 questions are there, right? And each question, I told you, is going to be asked by this disciple. Now the guru here, actually, in this Upanishad, it mentions exactly who the students are. And we get perturbed. What was the need for it? You know? Just tell me the question. Give me what is the question and the answer. In fact, question also you can abbreviate. I only want to know the answer. So these students are all illustrious students. So the indication is that these students have the question. So therefore, if I think that, oh, this question, I never thought like that, then I should not feel that I am dumb or I am a mandadhikari, you know, because it never occurred to me. Because this student also had that question, really, like that. So that is one reason why who is asking the student is mentioned. Then the other reason and more important reason is that although the question seemed to be simple, there is an underlying higher idea, higher notion, which while answering the question, the guru will bring. Therefore, that is to indicate that the student did not really don't know the answer, but he was actually looking for the subtlety of the answer, which he did not know. So therefore, there is a very good reason. Of course, we don't know who is Bharadwaj now. But in those days, people knew who these guys are. So this is the son of so-and-so, and this is the grandson of so-and-so, and that is all mentioned here. So therefore, oh. It is like, you know, this business is started by Bill Gates' son. Then say, oh, then I can invest there, you know. You understand what I'm saying? So it is good. Family mein chala aa raha hai, you know? It is coming in family, then it cannot be like, must be important. So to indicate that kind of thing. Like Anil ji just introduced me. He is so busy, he has no time. You know? And he has actually given us some time to come and give lecture. So you, if he doesn't say that, you know, theek hai, who wants? He says that, they say, oh really? Oh, okay then. So sabhi jagah ye chalta hai. Upanishad also says. Okay, so what are the six names? Let us chant it. It is actually difficult to chant, but we'll try our best. Om Sukesa cha Bharadvajah. Saibhyascha Satyakamah. Soryayenischa Gargyah. Kausalyascha Svalayana. Bhargavo Vaidarbhi. Kabandi Katyayanaste. So the six names are given here until we'll stop here, to indicate that six different students are mentioned. Who are they? Sukesa cha Bharadvaja. So Bharadvaja is the name of the clan. And Bharadvaja means belonging to that gotra, belonging to that family. And what is the name of the student? Sukesa. So Sukesa, son of Bharadvaj. Now Bharadvaj everybody has heard, right? If you have read Ramayana, you know who is Bharadvaj. So therefore, Bharadvaj's son is one of the students. Anil by his effect, you know. And okay, then who is the second one? Saibhyascha Satyakamaha. So the other student's name is Satyakama. Saibhya. Saibhya means again son of Sibi. Sibi also, you may have heard about Sibi. He's also a great rishi. So therefore Sibi's son also is asking the question. Okay. Then Sauryayenischa Gargya. So then this is Garga is the third student. And Sauryayeni means he is the grandson of Surya. Or he is the son of Shaurya. So grandson of Surya and son of Shaurya. And then not only that, he is Gargya means he belongs to the Gargi family. Garga family he belongs to. So again another identity mark on this student as to how great his lineage is. The fourth student is Kaushalya. Kausalyascha Aswalayana. So Aswala is the son of Aswal. Aswalayana means son of Aswal. Son of Aswal. Then the fifth student is Bhargava Vaidarbhihi. So this is a descendant of Bhrugu. Bhrugu Rishi, again you may have heard the name. So this Bhargava is the descendant of Bhrugu, and he is actually Vaidarbhihi, means he is born in the Vidarbha state. So where is Vidarbha, do you know? Maharashtra. Oh, it belongs to Maharashtra. Modern Maharashtra, old days. And so boundaries are all different now, but Vidarbha family. So Vidarbha state he is born. Then the last one is Kabandi Katyayanaste. So this Kabandi is the last, third, sixth student and great grandson of Katya, therefore Katyayan. So these six students are given, names are given. Now, what are they doing? Hete Brahmapara Brahmanistaha. Let us chant it. Hete Brahmapara Brahmanistaha. Param Brahman Veshamana Eshahavai. Tat Sarvam Vyakshatiti. Dehasamit Panayo. Bhagavantam Pipalad Upasannaha. So these six students got together, but what kind of credibility they have? Hete Brahmapara Brahmanistaha. They are actually dedicated to obtain the knowledge of Parabrahma. Supreme knowledge of the Brahman is what they are interested in getting. And they are engaged in realizing this knowledge, therefore they are following the whatever the scriptural practice is there. So Brahma Para, they are following the path that is indicated to obtain and reside in Brahman. So therefore they are already on the path of spirituality. In fact, they have progressed quite a bit, is what is indicated. Then only these questions, answers will make any sense. So therefore, for us also, if the answers don't make sense, to some of us, sometimes question also doesn't make sense. So, you know, it comes with practice. Nothing new there. The more we study, the more things reveal itself. Param Brahma Anaveshamana. So therefore, these students are intent on understanding Parabrahma. Eshaha Vai. Tat Sarvam Vyakshati Iti Teha Samitpana. And what did they think? They think that Tat Sarvam Vyakshati Iti. All our questions that we have, because they must have discussed the questions among themselves. We said, do you know this? I don't know this, but I have this question. Do you know this? No. So all six students are kept together. They have discussed their questions. They don't know the answers. Therefore, he said, Tat Sarvam. The answer to all our questions, Vakshati Iti. This person will be able to explain, will be able to answer with that idea, Bhagavantam Pipaladam Upasannaha. They approach this Bhagavantam, this great scholar, great teacher called Pipalada. And how did they approach? Teha Samit Panaye. Those people approach with Samit Panaye. That means to say that Panaye means hands. So carrying in their hands Samit. So Samit means dry grass. Now the significance of dry grass is quite a bit, because it is symbolic as well as it is useful. So obviously, for some reason, all the Mahatmas and Gurus in those times were living at altitude of 12,000 feet or higher. It's extremely cold, and to find dry wood is difficult in the snow-capped mountains. So therefore, when somebody comes to ask for a question, instead of barfi or jalebi or panda or whatever, they used to carry this dry wood. So the idea is that whenever you do some spiritual activity, of course fire is the most important thing. Therefore in Yajna Yagadi also it will be useful. For cooking purpose also it will be useful. And for removing cold, providing some heat also it will be useful. Therefore this is the most useful thing, most useful gift that somebody can give. That is why I don't like to give any Christmas gifts to anybody. Because how many percent of the gifts are returned? They were saying some numbers. Which means I gave a gift to somebody who didn't really care for it. And I spent 1 hour trying to figure out what I should give. Here it is very clear what gift to give. So in such cases, give the gift immediately. Somebody wants your time, somebody wants your consolation, somebody wants your advice, and you are capable of giving it, huh? Don't go around looking for kuch aaj advice koi nahi puchta, you know, not like that. Then you should give it immediately because this is being asked. So similarly, you will see that Rishi Pipalada also, he didn't go out and say, wait a minute, do you have these questions? This is what we do today. We go through Upanishad and say, you see, this is the question. You didn't have that question, but you should have that question. Let me answer. The question is not yours. How can the answer be yours? This is the problem today. Because the knowledge has become very easy. In fact, so many lectures are available on YouTube and video and audio and all that. There is no need to come here also. Oh, I have a better teacher who has explained it. Why go there? It is true. It is true. So, actually it is very important to look into the eyes of the teacher, whoever he or she may be, whatever level they are at, doesn't matter. The information that can be communicated through the eye contact is a lot more than sitting on your sofa, sipping cup of coffee, and getting disturbed now and then while the lecture is going on. Number two, whoever is your teacher, have reverence for the teacher. Because it is not going to matter to the teacher, but it will matter to us. Because if there is no reverence for the teacher, no matter what the teacher is saying, it will not make any sense to us. Because we'll say it's unimportant. Wasting my time and come on, when it is going to be over like that. Then nothing will happen. And you really wasted your time. So therefore, reverence to the teacher. Third thing is reverence to the scriptures. That is a must. So we are not starting something new. So many generations of people before our time has gone through the path and achieved the highest. And we have the right to achieve it. Because I have all the faculty that they had. With that attitude, we must come to the class. Then something can happen. And it is important to coming to the class because you see other people also like that. They're all listening, so you get somewhat encouragement by seeing them. I am not the only person who is pursuing this path of knowledge which nobody really values. All my friends say, "You're pagal ho gaya hai, chalo chalo movie dekhne jaate hain." There are others like me who are also equally pagal. Therefore, I get some benefit of being together. It is true. It happens. And then we also realize that all of them are not old. Because the idea is that the scriptural knowledge, the philosophy is only useful at old age. Or kuch karna hai nahi. eyes are not able to see properly, ears are not going, ah. At that time, maybe, just, you know, because nothing else is possible, so we listen. This is such a stupid concept that has come into our philosophy for some reason, and so many people believe it. And every day, at least one person I hear from. I'm not joking. Not directly, but indirectly. Then he was saying, you know, why you are going now? You are only an assistant professor. So, you are already late. What are you talking about? This knowledge is not useful after death. Maybe that is the reason why I think this. Everyone thinks, or not everyone, lot of people think that after death, Bhagwan ka naam leke marenge, to heaven mein pahunch jayenge. Ho gayi baat, chalo khatam. I will go to heaven. Swargalok, done. And then Krishna has by mistake said in Bhagavad Gita that even at the time of dying, if you just remember his name. So we feel okay. In my hospital room, everywhere, I'll write his name. There's no way I can forget. Understanding. So, therefore, people feel that at the old age, it is possible. Anyway, I'm preaching to the choir, but I see that every time and I feel very bad, actually. I like to see some young people come to the philosophy classes. I see young people coming to the Upanishad classes. Not that I don't like old people. I'm old myself. But they are the ones who have a greater chance. It will actually come in this Upanishad in the sense that what is Swargaloka and what is Brahmaloka, and how Swargaloka and Brahmaloka is actually incomplete. That will come in this Upanishad. So actually, this is, I'm just preparing you for it. Okay. So Samit Pana. So first of all, it is useful as a few. The second thing is the most important in my opinion. And that is to indicate that, O teacher, just as all the sap has been dried up from what this grass used to be, green grass at one time, and therefore it is now available to us as fuel, similarly, all the enchantment of this life has dried up from my life, and so I am available or higher knowledge. Because as Gurudev used to say, unless the detachment has come, attachment is difficult. And then don't wait for entire detachment before the attachment. This is a gradual process. Detach. More detachment, more attachment. Attachment to what? Brahman. Knowledge. Shastra. And detachment from all worldly things and beings which are giving ephemeral joy. Again, please don't misunderstand, because when I say that, some people say, oh, I cannot detach, I have a wife and I have two kids and I just started practice and for the first time I'm doing well. Detachment is mental, not physical. And mental detachment will definitely come if you are intellectually convinced. And the intellectual conviction is the sole purpose of Upanishads. By going through Upanishad, Brahman is not going to reveal to us. The revelation of Brahman will happen when we are ready, not because we went through the Upanishad. But what the Upanishad will do for us is to bring that Vairagya. And that Vairagya will be Viveka Janya Vairagya. So that it is not superimposed Vairagya. It is not something that I will forcefully do. I will do it because that is the only thing to do. Because I have understood the mechanism. So that is the only purpose Upanishad has. The third reason for taking this dry grass is even more important and more subtle. And that is to say that when I light up the fire, and in the old days, you know, we didn't have this matchbox and all that. So the fire used to be lighted up by collecting this dry grass, and then there is an urni, and you will churn it. And then first the smoke will come out, and then fire will happen. And then when fire comes out, you put more dry grass and wood and all that, and then the fire takes shape. That is to say that fire came from nowhere. That is to say that the potential to have the fire was inherently there. It just did not materialize until I put forth the effort. So therefore the dry grass indicates that, O teacher, the potential for me to have the revelation of Brahman is there. It hasn't happened yet. And I am ready to put my effort into it so that with your help, the revelation will happen to me. So it's very significant, you know. It is not that just dry grass lay, theek hai yaar, guru ne ek baar snan kar liya. Guru ke snan ke liye nahi. Everything in our sastra, actually, anyway, and every ritual also, if you look at it very carefully, you will see that every ritual has two or three levels of meaning in it, from the grossest to the subtlest. And ultimately, it leads to Parabrahman. So therefore, now we know what is the name of the students. We also know what is the name of the teacher. The teacher's name is Piplava. Okay. Now what happens? Now these students have approach. Now this is not a storybook, you know. So we have to assume that the students must have talked to the teacher and say, "Oh, teacher, we have some questions we would like to ask you." Da 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 da. So that for the next mantra, actually, the teacher is now addressing the students. Tanasarusi uvacha. Bhūya eva tapasā, brahmacaryena shraddhaya, samvatsare samvatsyatha, yatha kāmam prasnāna pruchyatha, yadi vignyāsyāmaha, sarvam havau, Vakshyama iti. Oh, the teacher says, Tanha. Tanha means to them. Sahasam, he, the teacher. So the teacher told them, Uvacha. Teacher, the Rusi, Uvacha, to them. What did he say? Bhūya eva tapasā. You must continue your tapas. So that doesn't mean that the students did not have any tapas. They had done tapas. That is indicated even by their own names and the quality of their questions. Now tapas means what? Tapas does not mean to deprive the body of something. Tapas means an intense churning of the mind for the highest knowledge is tapas. It is not a physical act, although physical act can help. So supposing I say, no, Monday is the most pious day. I cannot think anything wrong, I cannot do anything wrong, I cannot have any ill will towards everybody. Other days are okay. So, theek. Monday, no way. And Monday I'm only going to eat one time, etc., etc. Then we make the Monday highly significant for us. Then if I can't go to the temple in the morning, at least I'll go in the evening, or I'll read so many pages of Upanishad or Bhagavad Gita, whatever it is that we do. So Monday is significant for us. So therefore, that actually boosts us in our spirituality. And then not eating one day is tapas, one time is tapas. But that was not the main meaning. The main meaning was intense churning of the mind. Whatever we do, whatever we superimpose, whatever we think, to make that intense churning possible is called tapas. So the teacher said, you should do tapas. Tapas also in one sense means control of senses. That is to say that all my senses are now going outward. So tapas is to turn them around, not physically. You cannot take the plug the eye out and turn it, or plug the ear out and turn, means not physical. Conceptually turn it around so that my focus is on myself, not on other entities that I am surrounded with. That is called tapas. Bhuya eva, so he says, do again. I'm not happy with your level of tapas. He didn't say that. But he said, bhuya eva, do again. Continue your tapas. Then, brahmacharyena sraddhaya. And also do brahmacharya. Now, brahmacharya also, he says, no, because are you brahmachari? No, but I'm not married, you know. Married and brahmachari is okay, theek hai, you know. That is not the meaning of brahmacharya. Brahman charanti iti brahmachari. One who is reveling in Brahman at all times, one who is always thinking about Brahman is brahmachari, or Brahman means highest, or my own self. Spiritual seeker, therefore, is brahmachari, if he or she is dwelling in it at all times. Whether that person is married or not is inconsequential. Brahmacharyena sraddhaya, and you must have the faith. So therefore continue this practice of brahmachari, brahmacharya and tapas with faith. How long? Samvatsaram. For 1 year you do it. Samvatsyatha, and when that 1 year is over, yatha kamam prasnan prachata. Whatever is your desire, you ask me those questions. Or the students must feel very happy. Oh, that's good. 1 year to nikal lenge. You know, I have this intense desire to know. Somebody says, no, you have to wait for 1 year. Continue what you are doing. At the end of 1 year, you ask me questions. Whatever you desire, you ask me. We feel very happy. Okay, theek hai. I thought he will give right away, but at least 1 year, no problem. But here the teacher says, yadi vignyasyam, vakshyama iti. If I know the answer, I will give you the answer. Now a student like me will be go. The student will think, the teacher doesn't really know whether how do you know whether this teacher knows the answer or not? After 1 year, if you ask and he says, no, this question, I don't know, I'm sorry. And you wasted your 1 year. This is the sraddhaya comes there, you know, because they did not end up going to Piplada just like that. They must have heard that he is a prakhar, you know, Mahatma, he knows a lot of things. If you go to Swami Tapovendi Maharaj or someone like that, and he says, no, you study here for 5 years, then I will tell you the answer. You know, you will not run away because you know. So therefore, yadi vignyasyam, vakshyamaiti, sarvam havo, and that also, not vakshyamaiti, I won't tell you in brief. Whatever I know, I will in full detail, sarvam havo, I will give you the answer. But if I know the answer, if I don't know, then you are in bad luck. Okay. So just a little couple of things actually. We can say that this is really heartless teacher, we may feel like that. Or we may feel like this teacher is probably not sure that he will be able to handle the answer, because his students have come from, I think my battery is going to get over probably. students have come from such a far distance and they have so much, they are from such well-known families that they must have asked their father or mother or parents, whoever, and they did not answer. They have come to me. I don't know whether I can answer. So we may feel like that. But that is not the reason why he says yadi. Yadi here indicates namrata. Namrata. So that means the student, the teacher is so humble that he doesn't say, okay, whatever your questions are, you tell me, I will give you the answer. Not like that. He told the students, your questions may be so subtle, it may be difficult for me to answer. So if I know the answer, that is to say that it is humility of the teacher that is indicated by yadi, not the absence of knowledge. So that is one thing that I just wanted to convey. Let's go on to the next mantra. Now the first question comes. And the first question is raised by this student called Kabandi. Atha Kabandi Katyayana Upetya Prapaccha. भगवन कुतो हवा इमाहा प्रजा प्रजायंत इति. So this atha, after that means we have to assume that they stayed there for 1 year practicing their sadhana, upasana, and at the end of the year this Kabandi approached the teacher. Upetya means having approached the teacher, asks this question, Bhagavan kuto hava. Bhagavan, hey teacher, O great Mahatma, kuto hava. From what indeed imaha prajaha, from what indeed all these beings have come from. Prajayanta iti, how are they born? How did they come into existence? So the first question is about srishti. The first question is about creation. Any intellectual being who is interested in spirituality, this is the first question. I remember one of the first time that our treasurer actually for Chinma Mission came to me. His first question was, do you have any book that talks about theories of creation? All of us have that question. First question is the inquisitiveness as to where did we come from? What is the purpose of life? Who created us and why are we created? So that for this student, ask that question. Now, this question usually happens as a result of karma upasana. So that is why, remember I told you that in the Vedas, out of over 100,000 mantras, the first 80,000 or so mantras are actually on karma kanda. So do this ritual, do that ritual, do this perfectly, do that, it will give you this, that, etc., etc. When a person goes through that, then the inquisitiveness will come and say, I am doing all this. I am also getting results sometimes. I am also happy sometimes, but I am not always happy. My happiness doesn't last forever. Is this really life? Is this how I am going to die? Is this what was meant for me? If not, why am I here? Who created me? So that is usually the first question to an intelligent seeker. That is why this question is placed first. And the answer to this question, if it is understood, the student can enter avastha or brahmanista. Brahmanista means abiding in Brahman. So not only we have to understand the question, we have to make it our question if it is not yet. And we have to understand the answer that is going to be given by the teacher. There are total 16 mantras in this chapter alone. So this question has come in the third mantra, that means from 4 to 16, the teacher gives the answer. Okay. Now one thing, a technical thing maybe is right time for us to say. The reason why the student has this question is because he does not want to accept that I am only this individual entity. If we accept that I am this individual entity and everybody else is other than me, and then this is life, like it or not, go through it, and at the end of life, die. If we accept that, then there will be no inquisitiveness. There is nothing to know. What is there to know? Sometimes I get what I want, sometimes I don't get what I want. Sometimes I am happy, sometimes I am unhappy. So it's okay. If that is really what is life and I accept it, then there is no inquisitiveness, there is no reason for anyone to ask who created me and where have I come from and what is the purpose, etc. So the reason this student has not accepted that this individual entity called Jiva is really the highest reality is very clear from this answer. Although it is the first question that arises in us, at the substratum of the question is this notion that I don't think I know everything. I don't think that this notion that I have come here as an individual from the womb of my mother is really the answer, is really the whole truth. So therefore, but I see myself as an individual. But there may be a sambandha, there may be a relationship with something else that I don't see. Or I may be seeing myself as something other than who I am. So I'm seeing myself as this individual Jiva, but I'm not this individual Jiva. I must be someone other than that. That idea may not be the conviction, but that idea has come to the student's mind. So technically, this relationship is of four types. And the Sanskrit names, which you may or may not want to remember, but it's important to understand this. So this relationship may be because of sanyoga. Sanyoga means two entities have gotten together either permanently or for some time. Usually not permanently, for some time. For example, a bird sitting on the tree. It is impermanent, but currently the bird is sitting on the tree. And let's suppose that somebody you are trying to point out that tree to someone. Say, hey, out of all these trees, you know, that tree seems to be a little different. It is not the same as all other trees. And your friend may say, which one? He says, you see that bird sitting on the tree, that tree. And by the time he sees, the bird may fly off. But maybe as long as the bird is there, you could point it out. So this is called sanyoga sambandha. Then the other second type of sambandha is nitya sambandha. Nitya sambandha means that relationship will last as long as that entity will last. What is it? For example, golden ornaments and gold. You cannot say, I want to take out the gold. Because if you take out the gold, the golden ornaments are no longer there. So this is called Nitya Sambandha. They are always related. Golden ornaments are nothing but gold alone. Maybe the shapes and the forms and the functionality and the purpose of each golden ornament may be different. Some may be necklace, some may be bangles, some may be ring, etc., etc. But they are all nothing other than gold. The third sambandha or relationship is tadatmya sambandha. That is to say that this relationship developed because of the proximity. So for example, if you have read Atmabodh, Shankaracharya has given an example of a crystal next to a blue cloth or a red cloth or whatever. And so the crystal takes on the color of that cloth. This is called tadatma sambandha. So it is because of the proximity, the color is superimposed. But in Upanishads, there is usually another example which is more powerful. And that is that when an iron ball is placed in fire, the iron ball becomes red and takes the same color as the fire. So this is relationship because of proximity. And then the fourth and the last relationship we can say is kalpit, imaginary relationship. Such as we superimpose a snake on the rope. So which sambandh is applicable here, we can figure out. Actually, more than one. I'll give you one example. The body, the mind and the intellect. In fact, the entire antahkaran, when I say intellect and mind, is all inert. But it appears to have life because of the indweller is giving the power of life. So the life, the consciousness belongs to the Atma. But it appears as if the Jivatma, this individual entity, is alive. This is tadatma sambandha. Maybe you can actually see all the sambandha will be applicable. The same moon, when I look at some days, I don't feel good because, you know, for the last 6 months, Anil Bhai is not calling me for lecture. This moon has no power. Why? So that mood has come. Then immediately when I go home, oh, there is a call from there. Well, bye. Now the same moon will look so beautiful to me. This is called Sanyoga. Then, what is Nitya Sambandha? There is no difference between the gold and the golden ornaments. There is no difference between the Jivatma and Atma. In fact, everything that is there is nothing but vibhuti of the same Paramatma. And Kalpit, you already know, this thing that I am individual entity, I am not, has nothing to do with Brahman. Ishwar to itna bada hai, you know, is that's okay. That's part of the sadhana, by the way. That is upasana. That I am an insignificant nothing, and therefore I pray to the Lord to give me wisdom and power. Okay, so this is the first question. Now let us see how the teacher answers after we take the first break.